I'm Jennifer. We're going to be talking to an author and getting to know some of the things that she is writing about. It's a hot topic right now, and we're excited to be talking this morning to Neve Middleton. Her book title is Jesus and Women Beyond Feminism. It's an exegetical and a historical analysis of the relationship between Jesus, women, and the church. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
We're thankful that you are able to take some time out of your day today, and we just want to know a little bit more about yourself. So let's start there. Tell us a little bit about you.
I'm a widow. My husband died relatively young, and I have grown-up daughters here. I'm a former lecturer in theology and philosophy in DCU, Dublin City University. I took early retirement to focus on writing. I was recently in the US at the CTSA, the Catholic Theological Convention, the Society of America, Theological Society of America was their convention. It was in Atlanta, Georgia. And after it was done, I went up to New York. I have cousins in New York, okay. First cousins who emigrated over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to see them. Well, you know, I go to New York a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Before the pandemic, I went at least once a year. But during the pandemic, couldn't. So this was the first time I've seen them in a couple of years. Wonderful. So I like visiting them in New York.
Quite the difference between Dublin and New York.
Well, Dublin is a beautiful city. Dublin is a fabulous city, you know. But New York is, you know, it's much bigger. It's so much, it's huge compared to Dublin. And it has great buzz in it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It has great buzz.
Well, let's get talking about your book. In Jesus and Women, you combine the insights of evolutionary biology, feminism, and the Me Too movement. And it's highlighted in your book there. Tell us why and how feminism can be a controversial topic in the church.
Again, you know, as I say in my book, I use a combination of evolutionary science and feminism, the Me Too movement, show that, like, the thing is that one of the UK, in the, you know, Jesus had a revolutionary attitude towards women, and he took huge social risks to protect and defend them, and he treated them in a loving and egalitarian manner, and also, quite obvious, he favoured female equality at a time when such a concept was unheard of and unimaginable. And his treatment of women transcended all time and place, which is another very strong evidence of his divinity, as well as helping us to greatly enriching our understanding of it. So how come that was, you know, when I read the Gospels for the first time, that's when I had the born again experience. I was amazed at the way Jesus treated women. And that's why I started, you know, doing research. But I also was wondering how come institutional Christianity treats women, you know, so differently. And the thing is, one of the things that evolutionary biology has discovered is that religion and science evolved in tandem with one another to support male patriarchal power structures and to be used as, so religion also could be used as a force for social control, particularly of women. So you always have to make a distinction between religion as a phenomenon and religions when they're under the unique characteristics of them, when they're under the control of their founders. And when Christianity was under the control of Jesus, it was amazingly unique, radically unique. He was, you know, so, and the early church, the Pauline church, reflected his treatment of women because the females in it shared a lot of sort of diverse ministries with males, including supervision of the Eucharist. Now, things began to change somewhat as the church spread out into surrounding patriarchal cultures and they had to start appeasing the males in them. But it was when it became the state religion of the Roman Empire and became politicized that it dramatically regressed. That's, you know, and again, you know, in the Reformed tradition, there are at least female ordination is allowed in a lot of the denominations, although it is still controversial and it's still the patriarchal structures of institutional Christianity are still there. And they're still overall, it's male leadership, you know?
Yes.
So, Roman Catholicism, you see, because it's all male. I mean, celibacy is compulsory and it doesn't give still doesn't give females any authority. So it's probably the most patriarchal institution in the Western world, which is very ironic, mm-hmm. considering Jesus treated women. However, on the other hand, another thing I go into in detail in my book is that feminism as a movement could actually only have arisen in the Christian West, because we've had Christianity for the longest time. And the thing is, and it, you know, even male theologians agree with it, say this, that you see, in the early church, even though women lost their ministries, but they were never, like, they were always allowed into the liturgical space, into the masses and services on an equal level with males. They weren't segregated, whereas in all other religions they were, and they still are. So that as well, there were other things as well, like in Roman Catholicism and then in Christianity, where everywhere else polygamous was allowed, but Jesus has said, no, God wants monogamy. He wants, you know, when a man leaves his parents and with his wife, they become one flesh. Because back in those days, you see, males were allowed to be polygamous and have concubines and do whatever they wanted sexually, while women, if they did anything outside marital sex, would be stoned to death.
Correct.
So he was saying, and they when the Pharisees asked Jesus, they were trying to trap him. That was one of the things. He was so defensive of females and protective and so amazingly revolutionary, treating them, that was one of the ways they were trying to get an excuse to arrest him and execute him. So they were asking him, well, they knew when they asked him what about divorce, because Moses had told them they'd get a divorce, that he'd say that they could get in the way. But anyway, Jesus said, he said, no, you know, quoting Genesis, that God's will was to be monogamy and fidelity. Like back then, males were allowed to be adulterous. Females, you know, were, yes, really, yes. You know, the woman taken in adultery protects her from death. But the thing was, they said, well, Moses said we can give a certificate of divorce to our wives. And back then, Jewish males were allowed to divorce their wives for the most trivial of reasons. If their wives were getting too old, or even if they broke a plate or weren't good cooks, they could use those as an excuse. Mm. So Jesus said, that's because Moses knew how hard-hearted you are. Then he quoted the Genesis thing. See, the point is, you know, God meets us. That's the Old Testament. Comparing the Old Testament, God meets us where we are. The Jews were still way ahead of the surrounding cultures. They were even more, which were even more patriarchal. But anyway, that was, you know, that then in early Christianity, then in Roman Catholicism, they condemned polygamy and said that marriage had to be monogamous and that adultery was a sin for males as well as for females. And you see, that gave women greater stability and status. That was another thing that worked its way. So as these male theologians say, Jesus' revolutionary treatment of women worked its way outwards into secular society only in the Christian. That's why feminism could only have arisen here. And we in the Christian West have rights and freedoms more than you know, anywhere else. Now, the thing is that secular Christianity is now way ahead, you see, is ahead of institutional Christianity in its treatment of women. But that's also thanks to Jesus. And the point I make in my book is that while political feminism can tackle the symptom, then has done great work for the perennial battle of the sexes, and, you know, it can only a revolution in grace can restore the harmony between the sexes.
Yes.
That's described in Genesis 1. And that's the other thing, you see. In Genesis 1, God gave males and females equal dominion over the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was made quite plain as well that all world conflict, you see, is grounded in male-female conflict. And evolution expands on that. Evolutionary biology just expands on that and gives us deep insights into how it happened, into how it, we evolved that way. And yes, it was because of male-female conflict, and that was what causes wars and everything else, you know, so, and inequality, you know, poverty, all of that. So, you see, it's quite clear that it was a very important purpose of Jesus' ministry to initiate the restoration of harmony between the sexes, because that will help us to restore our Trinitarian imago Dei, you know, harmony, and it'll bring about harmony in overall in the world, male-female harmony.
Yeah, definitely. I'm thankful that I am able to serve in a denomination myself as an ordained elder, as a female clergy woman.
Great.
And I still see in the American church that we are afraid of that word feminism because of the political side of things. Why does that word feminism have such a controversial topic, even in denominations that are accepting of female in clergy and leadership?
Well, you see, that's another, like, I have issues. Like, I'm a feminist theologian. I used to be a political feminist while I was an atheist, you know? Mm-hmm. After the born-again experience, I became a theological feminist. But feminism, political feminism, you see, the thing is, the problem is, all movements like that, the pendulum swings too far.
Yes.
In the opposite direction. And it ends up causing harm to others, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, okay, it's basically it's saying, you know, women have to be the same as males and doing the same as males. And it's also in certain ways trying to emasculate males. And it has gone, you see, it has become far too politically correct. Now, the thing is, you see, that's why I have said that the authentic restoration of the harmony between the sexes can only occur in Christianity. But you see, all movements are like that. That's in all political movements. And the thing is that, Jesus, you see, that like in his treatment of women, his treatment of women was illuminated by his agape love, his Trinity, you know, his divine consciousness.
Yes.
And that shows the way forward for us to go to resume harmony between the sexes. But yet, see, that's the thing now, you see, political feminism, like I also say in my book, the next phase of feminism, and it'll be the best phase, will be one in Christianity. It'll be theological feminism grounded in grace. And that is what, yeah, I can, like, I have issues with political feminism now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes, I can understand that. Now, actually, in Roman Catholicism, there are a lot of male theologians and archbishops and cardinals that are in favor of female ordination and female, sorry, that are campaigning for it. That is the real kind, the best kind of, you know, that will be the evolve from, okay, it all has come from Jesus. And I, another thing I show in my book, feminism as a movement, you know, could only have arisen in a Judeo-Christian culture.
Correct.
So for it to achieve its full goals, it can only happen in the church. So yeah, I do understand objections to political feminism. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about reclaiming the church and you use those words, agape love and full grace, what does that look like? If we unpackage that and put it into practical terms, how can we look at that in a different viewpoint?
Well, you see, that's another thing, a point I make in the book, that the combination of insights from evolutionary biology, feminism, and the Me Too movement highlight the revolutionary attitude of Jesus in a new way that greatly expands our understanding of his divinity. But I also make the point only women will really be able to understand that, will it be able to see it, because we're the oppressed sex. And the thing is, too, it helps us understand in the gospel, you see, it was his female disciples who understood his messiahship and divinity in a way that eluded his male disciples.
Mm-hmm.
Because his male disciples, like Jesus, had the potential to be the political messiah that the Jews were expecting, and they wanted their political messiah to basically be the new world empire and to be able to impose their justice ethics on the world. Jesus was quite obvious, you know, that he had the potential. He was so popular, and his male disciples, the 12, they expected him to do that and wanted him to do it. And then when he was arrested, they abandoned him, you know, they ran off. And his female disciples, I mean, he made the sacrifice, you see. He made an amazing sacrifice for humanity of love, you know, mm-hmm. by sacrificing himself. Because he left with them, you see, by not fulfilling his potential, he left himself vulnerable to the male establishments. They were able to take it, you know, they were able to then get him. But his female disciples understood his divinity, understood that he must be a God-man. That because only a male capable, and only a God-man would deny himself that, you know. Yes. You know what alpha males are like.
Right.
And that's another thing you see that evolutionary biology shows us. The male will to power, you know. Mm-hmm. The male will to power is, you know, is what causes, you know.
Sure.
Has caused all so much. And Jesus was showing, you see, if you think about, if you think about, like, you know, Paul saying that Jesus didn't use his equality with God as something to be taken advantage of. Instead, he turned, he made him, he was, came in, you know, he was born basically as a, and became a slave to everybody and so on. So he's showing, you see, that's another thing we know from Genesis. See, man, humanity wanted to be God. And that's why the way was, you know, the will to power. But Jesus was God and he went down in the opposite direction. So he's showing us the way we have to go, you know, kenosis. We've got to, you know, humble ourselves. And the other thing too is, you see, that's another one of the things that when I was reading the gospel text, I was thinking, he must be a God-man. Only a God-man could perceive women in such a loving and egalitarian way as he did and understand us so well. And you see, his female disciples would have, he loved them so, you know, he loved them all. And they would have seen that too, you see, from a male, that he must be God, only a God-man.
Sure, sure.
Be so loving. So you see, the thing is that that can help. You know, the way in the evangelical, one of the things I like about evangelical Christianity is the way they try to bring about born-again experiences in adults, to bring that along. And you see, we, you know, women can see, and I think we women can see a new way of kind of conversion experiences, following in the loving path of Jesus. We could help to kind of, you know, bring that into a new evangelical faith, and a new way of, a radical new way of showing how to follow in the path of Jesus for males and females.
Yes.
Males and females.
Yes.
And that, as well as restoring harmony. See, okay, one of the downsides of female freedoms, and I've made this point as well in the book, one of the downsides of female freedoms is, you see, you're getting a fall off in marriage rates, you're getting rises in divorce rates, you're getting fall off in the number of young children being born, demographics are lowering, you see, and
yeah,
you're getting higher rates of female adulteries, and, you know. So what this will also do is restore, make restore marriage and make it even better than it ever was. Great marriages with really great family life.
Great.
And loving relationships between male and female. You see, that's very important.
Wonderful.
For society and for, you know, for world harmony, is happy families. Like, I would really love to be able to bring about a born again experience in Christian women, including Christian women who have fallen out of practice, as I had.
Yes.
You know, I'd love it to bring a born again experience to all Christian women and understand that, yeah, and help us to campaign. We need to regain our early church status.
Amen.
That's what we need to do. We need to regain our early church status.
Where can we learn more about you and purchase the book and maybe follow a little bit along your journey?
So my book is available on Amazon. It's also available on, if you want, you know, on my author website, NeveMiddletonAuthor.com. It's available on a lot of online.
Wonderful.
Barnes & Noble, but Amazon is probably the easiest one.
Well, the name of the book is Jesus and Women Beyond Feminism by Neve Middleton. We've enjoyed our time with you this morning, Neve. We thank you for taking time out of your day. And we look forward to finding a little bit more about your journey and checking out this book on Amazon, Jesus and Women Beyond Feminism.
Jennifer, could I just give you a summary sentence of what you're asking? Okay, so this is a theological path of grace that will take us beyond feminism and political notions of equality to the realm of relationships and the healing power of grace.
Outstanding. And I think now more than ever, we need to see that in our churches, not just here in America, but internationally. So thank you, Neve, so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much for the interview. You asked me such insightful questions. Thank you.